SAFM Literature with Nancy Richards.
Nancy Richards.
Leaving no page unturned on SAFM 104 to 107.
104 to 107.
Well, it's at back page time here on SAFM Literature. It's amazing how quickly the programme goes. And how's this for an interesting concept? The title of the book that we're about to discuss is called The Villager, How Africans Consume Brands. It's been written by Faye Oluboden, who is the CEO of Insight Publicist Nigeria, one of West Africa's leading creative agencies. So I've been referring to him as an ad man, but he's going to tell us a little bit about how long he's been an ad man and where he's been coming from to have put together this extremely interesting book, which, incidentally, should you have an interest in how Africans consume brands, he's going to be launching at a place called Impello in Johannesburg on Thursday the 15th of March at 6 p.m. And it's a whole big gig where he's going to be talking, and I think once you hear what it is that he's got to say, his concepts, I mean, you might be quite interested. So if you'd like to know more about that, how you can book, just check the website, which is impello.co.za. That's I-M-P-E-L-L-O, impello.co.za. And it's an Ignite session. Well, it's certainly going to ignite some interesting thoughts. Faye, lovely to have you with us. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Welcome to South Africa.
Thank you. Thank you. It's good to be here.
Is it very different to Nigeria?
Not much different. Johannesburg is almost exactly like Lagos. Same intensity, same
okay.
Mad traffic.
Hectic. I use the word of hectic.
Yeah.
So could tell us a little bit about you, because I've been describing you as an ad man. You certainly dressed the part, so you look like an ad man. But tell us about your history in the advertising industry.
Well, I've been in the advertising industry for 10 years now, but I always like to say that my career has followed the questions in my life, right from when I used to be a medical student, and I had the dream of being a doctor. But that didn't pan out too well, so I ended up studying psychology and then followed that to become a data analyst. Somewhere along the line became a market researcher, moved on to be a strategic planner, and then ultimately became the leader of the ad agency after some several years with the agency. So it's a bit of a checkered.
Yeah, gosh. Well, checkered. It's certainly certainly a direction, it was going in a particular way, very consistently in a particular way.
Yeah.
And during all those different incarnations, you must have learned a huge amount.
Yes, I have. Yeah, I did, actually.
So now you are heading up the ad agency, but are you, I mean, the fact that you've written a book is a bit of a clue. Are you a copywriter? Are you a creative, as they say?
I'm actually a strategic planner.
Okay.
By training within the agency. Beyond this book, I'm not on the creative end of things. So I've been an accounts man and then a strategic planner.
Okay. Well, strategy is all important, is it not?
Yeah.
So we know now a little bit more about you. So you've worked in Nigeria. Have you only been in Nigeria in terms of your advertising career, or have you travelled elsewhere in the continent?
I have had the opportunity to collaborate with partners across the continent, but largely I've been in Nigeria. However, during my Duke MBA, that took me across multiple countries, exposed me to multiple cultures, which gave quite a broader frame of reference to correlate some of the things I talk about in the book.
Okay. Let's talk about the book, The Villager, How Africans Consume Brands.
Yes.
Already I'm thinking, that's a broad topic, how Africans consume brands. I mean, it's a big continent and places are very different. But the idea of the African, and you describe yourself as a villager as well. It says it's written by Faye Oluboden, one of the villagers. So what do you mean by a villager?
Well, I mean, one of the villagers for me, it's really the fact that the stories and the frame of reference that I talk about in the book is actually very real, and it's also a path that I walked myself. The idea of a villager is that the African travels from the rural area to the city to try and build a dream, and even though he's in the city, he still carries some of the psychological constructs that defined him in the village, and it becomes a portal for the dreams of the village. So in writing the book, I couldn't help but realize that I'm actually one of the villagers myself, which ultimately I tag myself as on the cover of the book.
And yet things are changing so drastically. I mean, do you think that in every African, I mean, I'm really not sure about, but let's go with sweeping statements.
Yeah.
Is Is there a villager in every African? I mean, you don't think that people have now become quite, or many people in Africa, in all the major African countries, have become quite seriously urban?
No, I don't think so, because recently the Economist magazine conducted a research of 18 to 20-year-olds across different countries in the world, including a number of African countries, and they found that African youths, 18 to 20-year-olds, who were very active on social media, were actually the most culturally inflexible in the world. You know, so you can see that these people are engaged digitally, they are all over social media, they are doing stuff, but they hold on very strongly to their culture. And that's because it does take generations for critical aspects of culture to shift and to change. And that's why I hold very strongly that, yes, we're technologically advanced world and so on, but we're still villagers at heart to a large extent.
Well, so let's go back to the issue of brands, how Africans consume brands, which sort of implies that whatever we thought was the way Africans consume brands is not actually the case. Because, I mean, you know, right at the beginning, you described sort of epic fails in terms of some brands have not been consumed at all.
Yeah.
Give us an example of what's gone wrong.
So I think it's always a case of assuming that because the brand is coming from a Western orientation, that it's going to work that way in Africa. And I've worked on a couple of projects that I must keep confidential, but I remember one distinctly now that had to do with a tomato paste product. And we spent about 4 years on that project, conceptualizing, designing the packaging and all of that. And when we launched it, it still didn't take off. In spite of all the investment, the client has ultimately pulled out of that business as I speak to you. And it's all because of the assumption that it is what we tell the consumers about the product that will make them consume the brand. But it's not true. Consumers consume brands and anything else within their cultural frame of reference. You know, it's how the brands sit within their cultural frame of reference that determines how they consume the brand. And that's what I try to address and articulate in the book.
Okay, so it's not that Africans are not interested in a tomato paste product. It's just that it was not presented in the right way.
Yes.
In what way was it presented, and in what way, in your view, should it have been presented?
It was presented largely from a functional point of view, basically a proposition that says this product is so good, therefore you should buy it. Almost patronizing, if you will. When it should have been presented from a point of view of what does tomato paste signify to the African mother when she's cooking in the kitchen, from culture to culture. And we know that it's not just about food. There's all kinds of dynamics and human issues going on just cooking in the kitchen. And I think for that particular product, that was where the failure came from.
So are we talking about products that only come from the West, or are we talking about products that are born here in Africa?
It's both actually. I think anyone that's got products or businesses that wants to do well on the continent has got to pay attention to some of those things. Because even though we're Africans, I find that we haven't been as cognizant of our cultures and our ways as we should have been. And we aren't actually leveraging all of those things as much as we should, you know. So it works both ways. Products that come from outside, products that we launch internally, have also been affected likewise.
What about, I mean, I'm just, you know, made reference to your clothes. You know, clothing is big brand. I mean, brands that, you know, what you wear, your shoes, your shirt, your, you know, whatever, is very, very big. How does that work? Do those clothing brands need to be put across in a villager sort of a way?
So
I mean, it's a bit of a contradiction in terms there, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, your Gucci belt, hey.
You know, one of the things that I talk about in the book, there's an entire chapter on this that talks about signaling my journey, and talks about the concept of any product that the African is consuming in a social context. It has to speak about himself and who he is. It's a communication device for him. And I found out that fashion brands that have been successful have been able to make it about the consumer and what he's trying to signal about himself, rather than what the product is about. The other thing is, at the same time, we're finding that, and there's an interview I did in the chapter Digital Villaging, where I talk about a young man that's got a wonderful business, good friend of mine, where he's taking a local fabric to make different kinds of fashion accessories, and those things are taking off because the youths are finding in them some level of contemporariness, and at the same time finding the local culture embedded therein. So it's those kind of things that we need to consider.
So what do we say about the Gucci belt, you know, the polo shirt, the fossil watch, you know?
Those things have to help the consumer to talk about where he is in his journey. We believe that if you're moving through life, you've got to change what you consume. And I talk about the fact that in the West, you hear of billionaires and really rich people who dress the same way they've dressed forever. And I say that that's not an African thing. You're expected, as you progress through life, you've got to change how you dress. You've got to change the cars you drive, where you live, all of those things, to continue to signal your journey. So brands like Polo, Gucci, and all the other brands have got to find a place in the African's journey where they can stand and help the African signal where he is in that journey.
It's signifying that my journey, I have arrived.
I
am not only aspiring, I have aspired, and I am there.
Exactly.
So I have achieved what I set out, and I am successful. I'm glad you mentioned the digital villaging, because I just wanted to draw attention to that. You talk about, it was very interesting, that, you know, in Africa, many countries have leapfrogged through technology.
Yeah.
In fact, you reference your mother, who's now arrived on Facebook, and you're thinking, oh dear, is this a good thing? You know, which is, I'm sure, it's terrific, really. But, you know, in Nigeria in particular, you have leapfrogged to the point where there are no landlines.
Yeah.
Is that, you know, to what extent has social media, you know, accessibility, technological accessibility changed how we consume brands?
Yeah. So what we've found is it actually hasn't changed it much, because technology is an enabler, is an amplifier. It helps us to express more of who we are. And to a large extent does not change so much of who we are. There are some aspects that have changed, but there are some that have remained very strongly the same. So it helps us express, communicate more. Because we're very social, and we're a collectivist culture. What social media has done for us is that it has allowed us to amplify very strongly that the collectivist element of our culture, because now everyone can see what everyone is doing, which is almost reminiscent of a small village back in the day where everyone knows what everyone is doing.
Yeah.
You see what I mean? So it's really how that's going on, really.
I suppose there would be some people who would take issue with the collective Africans. You know, Nigeria is not Swaziland, it's not Malawi, it's not, you know, all the countries have their own characteristics. That was a very brave move to say Africans.
Yeah.
Are you completely comfortable that you can defend
yeah,
that?
I'm completely comfortable with that. You know, that position came from my background in research, where you have to take a sample that's representative enough of a population and use it. And the reason I use Nigeria is not likely because I grew up in Nigeria and all of that. It's because if you look at the composition of Nigeria, it's multiple countries in one. I talk about the fact that Nigeria has the highest ethno-linguistic density of any country in Africa. There's 1,500 languages spoken in Africa. 520 of those are spoken in Nigeria alone. You know, so it's like you actually have multiple nations within the country, and the cultures are so different from some tribes to the other that it's actually easier for a Nigerian to marry a European than to marry another Nigerian. It's that different. And the other thing is, in the process of writing this, I've had people from other parts of Africa actually read and listen to me presenting, and said, This resonates. It looks like where we are. It looks like how we behave. Of course, in some of the details, there are differences. But in the broader framework presented, there's quite a lot of similarities that are applicable across markets in Africa.
Mm. You know, I was just thinking about all those languages, and I have heard that it's so in Nigeria that there are so many different languages, and we think in here in South Africa, we've got, we've got 11. Wow, you know. It's nothing really, is it? But it plays a big part in advertising. I mean, as copywriters, you know, it's a huge thing to get the words right.
Mm-hmm.
But it is part of one's brand management. Your brand needs to fly without words, really. Otherwise, you're just going to be not really talking to anybody.
Yeah.
Is that part of the strategy that you recommend to people who are managing their brands, that it needs to be wordless, show, don't tell?
Yeah, I think the imagery can be used. Imagery can be used quite powerfully, because as Africans, we're also quite colorful, quite visual people. And it's also about minding the nuances. So in the north versus southern part of Nigeria, for instance, the north, they're very conservative, very Islamic place. There's some images that you can't show. There's some nuances and cues that you can play with in the south that you cannot play with in the north. So every time we've had to do work for brands, we've had to be mindful of those and actually not just change the lines and the words, actually change the imagery. To still communicate the same essence of the brand. So it's a very real issue.
It's a big issue. It's a minefield, I want to say. It's very difficult. And I don't envy you your position, but I do envy you your book, because it's certainly, even the title, the whole concept of it is certainly going to get people talking. Yeah. It's called The Villager, How Africans Consume Brands, and it's been put together by a villager himself, so he declares, Faye Olubodun. And if you'd like to know a little bit more, if you'd like to hear his presentation, it's going once again to happen at Impelo in Johannesburg. It's an Ignite session, and it's happening on the 15th of March at 6 o'clock. So if you'd like to know more, I think best you just Google Impelo, IMPELLO.co.za. And next up, we're going to find out what's going on with the cricket.